Welcome to Project Chatter, the podcast where PPM experts from various sectors talk about the latest trends. Listen to Val and Dale as they talk about tried and tested best practices and share their unfiltered thoughts about the industry. Whether you're here to learn how to progress your career, improve your project control skills, or just want to hear an Aussie and South African rant about projects, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Project Chatter podcast with your hosts, Dale Fung and Val Matthews.
In this episode, we talk to Tim Creasy about what all the fuss about AI is. Tim Creasy is ProSci's Chief Innovation Officer and a globally recognized leader in change management. His work forms the foundation of the largest body of knowledge in the world on managing the people side of change to deliver organizational results. We've had Tim on before, and he's always fascinating. He's easy to listen to and distills information that anyone can consume. I found this absolutely fascinating. Marco, thank you for jumping in and being a guest host with me on this one. How did you find it?
Thank you very much for having me. I found it mind-blowing, I'm honest. I think the key takeaway is everybody probably, especially in our industry, is just scratching the surface. So start to look at it. It's amazing what you can do. Use it also not only for the profession, but also for the areas where you are, you know, which you like. And for the profession also, I think the more we get used to use it in the, you know, in the proper way, really using it, the more it will help us in doing our job faster and better. I think it was mind-blowing, this episode. I'm really honest. It opened my mind to many different possibilities that I never thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you there. The nursery rhyme that he takes us through was fascinating. I'm not going to give any spoilers to the listeners. But it's always a pleasure to have Tim on. And he explains things so simply. So I'm not going to go on any longer. We'll leave it there, folks. As we always say, keep listening, keep liking, and keep paying it forward. Hello, Project people, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Project Chatter podcast. As you've probably guessed, no Val, but also no Martin on this episode. We won't miss them too much. Get well soon, Val, and wherever you are, Martin, have fun. But we do have a very special returning guest co-host, Professor Marco Frisender, no stranger to the Project Chatter podcast. How are you doing, sir?
Very well. Thank you very much for having me again here.
No, it's our pleasure. It's an upgrade from Val, so... it's good to have you back on the podcast and good to see you doing well. Mr. Tim Creasy, it's been 2 years since you've been on the pod. We were just sort of reminiscing of times gone by before we hit record. How are you doing?
Doing very, very well. Yeah, it was. I loved doing those episodes that we did a couple of years ago, and I cannot believe it's been 2 years since. We were talking about how 2023 felt like a bullet train for a lot of folks. So it's so good to I've listened to y'all on my preferred podcast platform, but it's good to be back to talk with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. And you're right, although the time has flown, a lot has happened as well. And I know there'll probably be very few people, but there'll be one or two that aren't familiar with you. And if they haven't listened to your previous episodes, it'd be good just to touch briefly on your origin story again, just to remind people of your background before we jump into it, because you have a fascinating backstory. And I always love when you share that. So I don't know if you don't mind just giving some of the highlights of your career to date and what brings you to where you are today.
Yeah, very good. Well, hopefully I do hit those high notes. So Tim Creasy, Chief Innovation Officer at ProSci. We're an organization dedicated to helping organizations figure out what gets in the way of change success and then figuring out how to overcome those obstacles. I joined the firm in January 2001 as employee number 9. We shrank to 3 when the economy burst back then. And now we have a global footprint. We're all over the planet working with all of the planet's biggest organizations. So, yeah, it's been a fascinating journey. We were founded by an engineer with an insatiable curiosity about why are some projects successful and others not, right? He was running huge engineering projects and he had had a stack of each. And he started to say, what's the difference between the two? How can I figure it out using research? And then how can I equip people to pile higher that stack of successful projects by employing what it is we learn? So that's kind of at the core of ProSci as an organization. Today, we help our clients through advisory services, through training programs, through published materials, continued research, always staying at the frontier of what's the difference between those projects that succeed and those that don't, and how do we seize the opportunity that sits in that gap. So.
Wow! You did a lot. You covered a lot in a very short space of time. But those that do want to hear more of your story, I think they should go and check you out on LinkedIn. And I know there's plenty that you've published online as well. So I think that short bit of time doesn't do your career enough justice. But thank you for coming back on the Project Chatter podcast. We've previously spoken about change management, as you mentioned, and we know why we've spoken about that. But you know. We've also delved into the fact that every single project is a change project. It's change management. Project management is change management. And in many respects, the project management profession, the infrastructure construction industry at large, I personally believe is behind the curve when it comes to technology. And since we've last spoken, and I was saying to you offline that, you know, it feels like the past 12, 18 months, all anyone wants to talk about is data and AI and machine learning and these types of things. But we haven't really spoken about change management in a while. And if we bring those two topics together, you get, how does AI impact change management? Does it? And I know you've done a lot of research on this. You've spoken a lot about this in the past time since we've spoken to you. But where do you want to start with this topic? Because it's such a big topic.
Yeah, and Dale, I think there's several different facets of it, right? There's how does AI impact change management? So how does AI impact how we help people embrace, adopt, and use the changes that are impacting them that are part of projects and not part of projects? There's also the whole notion, the flip side, which is how do we actually encourage the adoption and usage of AI in organizations as we start to get out in front of what is going to be, I think, a transformational technology, right? Industries are certainly going to be disrupted. Organizations are going to be impacted. And I think as much as we're talking about it, I think most practitioners and a lot of organizations are still very much, I have this whole set of alignment hacks that I use to get on the same page with people, right? 12 different ways to get on the same page with people faster. One of them is what I call marathon measures. So a marathon, right, is 26.2 miles long. And so we can use that to create like a shared sense of where we are on the journey. I think a lot of organizations are maybe a quarter of a mile into this journey of truly understanding what is tapping into all the zeros and ones that they created over the last 20, 30 years. They can tap into them in a whole new way. And so I think the horizons are fascinating, I think. I think I'm not one of these that it's going to save the world instantly, but I think the horizons of what we can do with digitized information now that we have this new tool, I think is a fascinating frontier to explore. So,
can I immediately ask a question? Because I think it's a very important topic for change management. Probably is the one which is the least spoken, in my opinion. I've heard it for every part, not for change management, but generally speaking, can we also try to give, from your perspective, obviously, you know, what is exactly AI? Because I speak with people. Some people think that AI is like the ChatGPT, you know, where you can go in and just ask a question and you get an answer. And you go to, completely to the other spectrum, where they think, it's a magic stick, which, you know, I will just look at it and it will tell me, the project, where the problem is, what they should be doing, which actually are paid to do that. So, you know, what is, in your opinion, the different, because it's really vast kind of, you know, tool, if you wish. And I think it's a good thing if we start also trying to give a little bit what is actually AI in this context that we are talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm not even going to pretend to be a technology expert to understand. I was talking to a gentleman a couple of days ago that in 2017 is when he started his first publishing around AI, right? So like I was nowhere near, I certainly don't have an understanding of kind of the history and the evolution. I do think generative AI, you know, that we saw kind of unlocked December 22. And we're seeing rapid advancements now in terms of the language-based approach is something that is revolutionizing the way I work, and I think has the potential and will revolutionize the way people work with words. And I think that's the interesting thing, right? There's this great article about how generative AI, and so I'm going to mostly talk about generative AI because I do think, I'm sure, especially in industrial projects, we have other kinds of automation, augmentation, and artificial machine learning that is different than large language model synthesis of the written word, which is where, frankly, I spend all my time, but, you know, most of us spend our time in the written word. And so all of us have the written word we use to exchange information kind of at some level. So there's this great article in the Financial Times that talked about what unlocked the ability to see the results we're seeing now. And it's the story I tell is it's really word probability math, right? We're doing really, really, really high-end probability math on what word comes next. And so the way this kind of visual article unfolds this is every single word has a bunch of facets of meaning about them. So you take like the words I and we. And if you take all those facets of meaning of I and we, some of them are similar, right? They're both first-person expressions, but some of them are different. You take sea, ocean, soccer, football. Every word has a bunch of different facets of it that give it the meaning that it has. And now we, because of the large math we're doing, we can start to make sense of that. You string some of those words together, the Financial Times is the example they use in this article. And each of those words, because of the facets of those words and how they now are strung together, have meaning in and of itself. And then what large language models do is they're doing really good math on what word comes very next. Given the context of the question and the prompt we put in, and given the learning material and how it's been trained. So here's the example I use with people. Mary had a little...
Lamb.
Right? Mary had a little lamb. Many of us, if we grew up in sort of a Western culture intelligence, that was part of what we grew up with. Now imagine you've got this brand new AI bot, large language model bot. It's just been born and it has the entire figurative library of the written word right over there, but it's not read any of it yet. Mary had a little what?
Cat.
The chance of you two both saying cat is astronomical. Usually the punchline to my joke is one in as many words as there are in the English language, right? There's like no problem. But you both said cat at the same time. So now my mind is absolutely blown. I don't know if I'm in a time warp or something.
We didn't even prepare it.
No, you couldn't have. This is the first time. Okay, so Mary had a little, it's not going to be lamb. It's going to be any other word. Mm-hmm. You give it one book. You give it 10 books. You give it 1,000 books. You give it 100,000 books. You give it access to that whole written word library and ask it, Mary had a little what? What does it guess? Lamb.
Lamb. Yeah.
Because of the what, just it's absorbed all those words. Now, instead of giving it the whole library, we only give it the medical section. Just the medical section. Mary had a little blank. It's not lamb. What would it guess? If you two say the same word, I'm out. I'm done with the podcast. Mary had a little
seizure,
headache,
cough, procedure, complication, headache, right? Whatever it might be. Because it's doing is lots of probability math on what word comes next, given the frame we've given it, because it knows language because it's been exposed to so much. Now let's just give it the 16th century European history section. This is a Mary Queen of Scots joke, right? Mary had a little time to get ready for the throne. She was only a week old. Mary had a little son named James. Mary had a little harp, right? Like the Mary had a little is merely the context that we're doing probability math into. And so once the written word all started showing up in zeros and ones and it all got digitized, and now we got this sort of unlock, we can do stuff with those written words like we have never had before. So imagine, if you would, I give this bot only access to the ProSci wing of the library. Mary had a little barrier point. Mary had a little resistance. Mary had a little sponsorship issue, right? And so to me, that's, as we start to think about the large language model, we're the artist. We get to commission this intern to come work with us, and we get to engage them in totally different ways to, I don't know, it's a fascinating frontier to be playing with.
That's really fascinating. But the question I have is also then, do you cope for, so because obviously in project management, well, we are already three people with three different, you know, just here in the podcast with three different backgrounds and languages or, you know, and so on. How do you cope with it? Because, for example, especially in project management, what I realized when I do meetings with, well, Italian companies or, you know, Singaporean companies, Chinese companies, it's very different. And sometimes they use, not methodologically speaking, but they use certain language or certain words in a very different way compared to what we would. And it's coming because of translation or, you know, because of many things. But even in the language itself, the meaning might be slightly different.
I'll give you kind of two wrinkles on it, because I think you set up the context of you're having a meeting with these folks.
Yeah.
And so to me, the way I'm helping people start to think about their work is, what are the three buckets of work you do? There's work only you can do. There's work you could hand off completely to be done by AI. And there's work you can start to do together with AI, that you can engage AI as your intern to unlock magical things. So there's those three different kinds of work. In your context, sitting in a meeting, that's the work that only you can do. Face-to-face meetings are things that is work I can do that AI can't help me. Now, to the notion of its ability to help us translate and make sense of language over here and language over here, that's one of the things it's the best at. One of the powers or the capabilities of my AI intern that I use the most, I call it TextFlex. TextFlex. Because it can take a chunk of text and flex it in a lot of different ways because it's read all those shelves of the library. In the example I give, I take my 250-word bio, right? Marketing wrote it. It's really nice. I drop it in and I say, okay, flex it to 100 words. Because if I'm applying to a conference, it has to be flex it to 150 words. So it can flex length really well, but then I add two more flexes that it can do. The next one is audience. Flex it to 150 words for a project manager audience. Flex it to 200 words for a bunch of scientists. 80 words for executive senior leaders. And then I add tone as a fun one. Make it more casual. 75 words as a proud mother-in-law would say, right? I do often then add in some flexing into language. So give me 75 words in Canadian French. Give me 75 words in Mexican Spanish. And I've tested with my colleagues there. They're like, yep, that is completely spot on and dialed. So the notion of like truly translating language to language, it actually has a fascinating ability to flex between those. It's not going to replace you in the meeting. You're going to have your experience, your wisdom, and all that stuff that comes to, and your understanding of the difference in the meaning. But I could certainly lean on its vast understanding of those two wings of the library to kind of bring together to me a synthesized understanding.
Yeah, because, sorry, Dale, just the last point, because obviously, especially going back to the change management, that's actually the context I was actually looking at it, because obviously I can write, you know, in order to be sure that I capture the changes that are happening, obviously there is still an element of language or way that I describe things within the change. So I can follow the process, no problem. The process is unique. Everybody follows the same. But then the way it's written can then have, you know, different, different impacts in a sense. And that's fascinating for me, because if you can actually change or, you know, flex the language in such a way that actually can then, you know, even take, for example, I don't know, an Italo-Swiss speaking in English like me and, you know, make it understandable to everybody else, obviously, you know, this opens incredible, you can do literally a lot of things with that. Huh?
take this one page case for change and make it applicable to frontline employees. Make it resonate with middle managers. Make it resonate with my senior leaders. Translate it to Italian. Flexibility and power. I'll tell you, I'll give you a couple of my other perspectives on AI here. One is the phrase first drafts in a flash. And I think that's really important. First drafts in a flash, right? Because your AI is your intern, not an oracle. You go to an oracle to get answers. You go to an intern to engage them in a task you need done. And sure enough, this thing is super fast at doing all kinds of different tasks. But that mindset is really important, that we're engaging the intern, not going for the answer. So when it comes back with the one pager for the front line, the one pager for managers, the one pager for senior leaders, you're going to still read those. Like, you're not just going to copy and paste that in and call it good, but it's a first draft you get to run with, you know, immediately, just like that. So, that's kind of this power of flexing. So to pull in the research real fast, right? One of the questions we asked is, how are you currently using AI tools? And the two top responses were communication support. And that typically referred to existing communication, something I already had built, but I want to help brainstorming it or refining it or drafting it or putting it into a different tone or a language. And then the second was content creation. So that's truly using it to kind of build visuals, get those first drafts in a flash. The TextFlex, I engaged a bunch of nonprofit leaders about how to use AI to write grants and so much more, right? Because it was January and I was like, there's value here. And I know some folks who might be able to find value in it. And I used TextFlex with them. And I actually used one of the nonprofits that was attending. And I told ChatGPT to go to their webpage, read all about them, including the About Us page, and then come back and write for me a 250-word description that appeals to executives in the community and a 150-word description that appeals to millennial leaders in the community. And to watch it, like, right, that's the power of starting to play with language when we get it down to the atomic unit of zeros and ones, because it got digitized at some point, and now we can just play with it in a whole different way. So,
yeah, it's fascinating. And if I jump in there, I think I love the fact that, Marco, you jumped in and set the context for the listeners, because you're right, there are different forms of AI. So to kind of give the baseline of, we're talking about the large language model element of AI and how we use text and language is really, really key here, because as you say, there's other forms as well. But I think particularly if we look back, Tim, from memory, we spoke often about change management and bringing people along the journey. Often we know what we want to do. We want to get from A to B. And sometimes the joker in the pack are people, people's behaviors, their buy-in, the stakeholder management, having the right sponsor, as you're saying. I do like the fact as well that, you know, you've mentioned it's like an intern AI or large language model. It's like an intern, get you there faster. It does the grunt work for you, but you still have to check the work, right? You still have to make sure that it's fit for purpose, because as we've spoken on previous episodes, AI does hallucinate. It does give you incorrect answers. So it's not the oracle. So we've cleared that one as well. But how might one use it? Let's say they've got a change program, whether it's a fully fledged project or they're in an organization and they want to do some sort of massive organizational procedural change, or they're bringing in some new software tool or app or something, but whatever it is, but it's going to significantly impact people. How does AI help you from that perspective?
Yeah, great question. And just to step into it, you know, when we did this webinar at the beginning of the year, we asked the audience, we had about 1,800 people, we asked them, which of these three levels of focus is yours? Is it figuring out how to do your work as a change practitioner better, helping the organization put together an AI strategy, or doing the change management work on a current AI deployment? Like, you're rolling out Jasper and you're the actual one trying to figure out adoption and usage of it. It was 2/3 just trying to figure out how to do my work better, about 1/5 helping to shape an enterprise strategy, and then only about 12% that were doing the people side adoption work on AI specific deployments. So that's kind of the lay of the land as we saw it. Those 2/3 of that group, you know, that's just, how do I figure out how to do my job better? there were five big applications that came out of that research that we completed. I'll list them off kind of quickly, and then I got a bunch of examples underneath. But first, we'll talk about how each five may or may not show up for the project manager, right? Because I'm guessing there's a lot of overlap here. Communication support and content creation. Those are the first two that we had already mentioned. Strategy and planning is the third. The fourth is automation and efficiency of repetitive personal tasks. And then the fifth is around data analysis. I am not a betting man at all, but I put $20 down that all five of those are types of work that your audience is doing on, you know, in and out, day-to-day basis. That's the kind of stuff we're trying to figure out how to get better. So I've got some sort of like specific use cases underneath each that we can kind of tease out. But first, I'd be curious about your thoughts on kind of those five buckets of communication support, content creation, strategy and planning, automation and efficiency, and data analysis.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. If I go first, then I'll let Marco give his take on it as well. And being sort of a consultant now and working with lots of different organizations trying to deliver projects better, there is, as we did on the top of this episode, clarification required on what you mean by AI or technology. And a lot of people use these words interchangeably. What I find that most organizations, project organizations, actually mean when they talk about AI or technology or data analytics is actually, in the first instance, automation. Because typically you're starting off going, I have data here and I want to see it here faster, quicker in this format. I don't want to spend so much time turning the handle on reporting. Okay. So you take people along that journey. So yes, automation for me is absolutely what people don't realize they mean in the beginning. And tools like large language models help us get there. Statistical tools, programming, coding, Python scripts, ingestion pipelines, data analytics is something that comes after you've got the data together. So automation is what I'm seeing as the first step when it comes to improving data maturity. Once you have all of that together and you can bring the ingestion pipeline together and all those wonderful things, you can then start applying the algorithms where you can draw out insights and you can start making suggestions. You can become a bit more predictive. I don't think we're in a stage where we can become prescriptive yet, but we certainly can say, hey, this may happen. These are the 5 to 10 likely scenarios that may happen. Now you've got your cost, schedule, risk, contract data all together, health and safety data. You know, you've got it's visualized with the topography, and you've got GIS information, and you've got a digital twin, and bring all that information together with some really powerful people that can write code. You can actually get richer, faster information out of it. So that's key for me. I think where I've seen particularly leaders use the communication side is when they're drafting emails, they're trying to perhaps address a topic that they may not be familiar with, to go, how do I prep for this? And so it helps them both in written and verbal communication. I do also think that people are using it to understand things quicker. So as you gave your example, put in a URL for a website, tell me about this web page, this company, this organization, this person, whatever the case might be. You can ingest simply documents and tables and CSV files or whatever you got into, you know, ChatGPT or whichever one you're using, and it'll just tell you what it's seeing. And so that's automation. That's giving you stuff quicker. And so for me, certainly out of the ones you've listed, I'd probably say automation, communication are the two key ones. For me, generation of visuals isn't a biggie at this stage, because I think the visuals that project managers look for are charts and graphs, etc., that's based on the data they're feeding in. And I don't think the likes of your large language models are capable yet. It will get there. But the ones certainly that we have access to or using at large don't have that capability yet. But that's my go. I've spoken for a lot there. Marco, what do you think?
No, I think you're kind of right. I think the real issue is that from project perspective, we are really, really backwards in a sense. So the automation part, I agree, is probably the first thing that you want to do. But the reason is because we are not even capable at the moment of having the data in a correct way to be actually interrogated. So even when you want to automate something, there is a lot of work, you know, which needs to be done in order to automate it. So I think we are kind of using, that's just my take, but we are kind of using the automation part to actually sort also the data, you know, the physical data issue. I think the most used in terms of language is for sure using it, you know, to write, business cases. For example, you can say, go check all the business cases. I want to rewrite the business case on, you know, A, B, C, D. And you don't start from scratch. You know, you have something there which is written, which is always easier than start from a blank page. I honestly believe that we are in the industry we are in, we are just scratching the surface in general. I don't think that it's actually understood. I think the only part which is understood is go on ChatGPT, and if you want to do, I don't know, a macro on Excel, ask him you want to do a macro, and he gives you the, you know, the code that you can copy paste, and the macro works. I'm really not joking. I think there is a number of people which are just using it in that way. The other problem is many of the leaders at this stage don't understand what actually the output or the possibility is. Because the practitioner hasn't yet grasped, you know, the so he cannot even explain it in a sense. And then obviously it gets diluted and diluted. So that's how I see it. So I think it's very true. Communication, automation, and then data analysis. Visualization, I agree with you then. I think it's kind of easy. Everybody's using Power BI again like it's a wizard, you know, it can give you all the sorts of answers. If I can now project into the future, it might become a wizard the moment that you can actually ask questions and he actually gives you, you know, the targeted answers. We are not there yet. There are some tools which are starting to do it, and I think it's great. But again, the adoption in the true sense of using it with all the power that you can have, I think we are probably using 10% of this power at the moment. Yeah.
And I think you're right. People are just not necessarily imagining what could be, right? In terms of the what they do with words, what they do, not just words, what they do with zeros and ones that they could start to do in a different way. You know, I leaned way into the MyGPTs when they came out, which was like last November, December. Project Chatter, you guys were there too, right? In that very first week, you put out a bot that could allow you to kind of explore your transcripts. Some of my more recent ones, I did in the nonprofit space, right? I did one to help write grants for nonprofits. I built a Tim translator. So I started with engaging GPT and said, hey, I want to write a style guide so that we can mimic my writing. First, let's agree on what makes up a good style guide. And we kind of really worked for a little bit and agreed on what were the components of a good style guide. Then I loaded up 15 of my favorite articles. So these are my 15 favorite articles that capture my voice, my tone, how I want to write. Analyze those 15 articles and then fill out the writing style guide so that now we can hand this off to a ghostwriter that happens to be an AI ghostwriter also and start generating writing based on that. Wow. And I bake that into the GPT so I can take any chunk of text, copy and paste it in, and it translates it into my tone, my sentence structure, my use of passive versus active language. It's been fascinating to start to lean into those kind of applications.
Yeah.
Then I took one, and then so I took the Tim translator, decided to tune it up a little bit, and turned it into the Tim bot. So I loaded it with 180 pages of my most recent podcasts, where I was a guest. So Project Charter, I think, is probably in there. And so now you can ask it questions about any kind of current change topics, and it's been trained on my most contemporary talk tracks.
It's been trained on you, on what you've said.
And in how to talk like I do. So wild.
Well, you know what the next step is, right, Tim? It's then taking your likeness, digital likeness, a synthesia or something like that, adding it on top. It's got your voice. It's recorded now. It can mimic that, a voice synthesizer. The next time we have you on, you don't have to even be on.
It just won't even be me. I haven't gotten too much into the sound and video stuff, but yeah, it's right there, right? I also, whenever I prompt, I use lots of pleases and thank yous and nice jobs and whatnot. And so I like letting people watch me prompt, because I think there's things you learn by watching people engage and how they prompt. And so people are always like, why are you saying please and thank you? And I'm like, well, first of all, richness in language is the currency of generative AI. The richer my language is in my instruction and my interaction back and forth, the richer language I'm going to get back out, which is what I'm looking for. And when they do take over everything, they are keeping a naughty and a nice list. And so when AI does take over, I want to be on the nice list, not the naughty list. So I always offer my pleases and thank yous and nice jobs and words of encouragement. So.
Yeah, but you are right on one thing particularly, I think, is where people are learning the art of communication by communicating with, let's call them, and I know this is dumbing it down, but a chatbot. Effectively, that's what it is. It's a chatbot, but a really, really clever chatbot based on, you know, a plethora of data that we couldn't get our heads around. And the better you prompt, it's all about the prompt if you think about it, because as you say, what it's doing is taking large chunks of data and distilling it based on your prompt. You can give it one word and it'll give you an answer. It'll give you a response to that one word. You can give it 1,000 words and it'll give you a far more concise answer based on the context you give it. And through this, I actually believe that whoever's using it, and I hope a lot more people in projects are starting to use it, is we're becoming better at communicating, because we're starting to realize if a computer gives us a better response by the way we prompt it and talk to it, perhaps humans would do the same.
Absolutely. There's a guy named Connor Grennan at NYU Stern in the AI space. And a couple of thoughts here. He said, prompt engineering is the wrong title. We should be calling it speaking human again. And this is part of that, like, keyword thinking broke us. It taught us to think in keywords. And so we first have to unlearn speaking in keywords and get back to speaking in human. Pain, power, and potential of getting on the same page with somebody. Like, right but different interpretations, a line miss. I've spent 5 years thinking about how often we communicate to somebody and leave the gap open this big that it could be interpreted three different ways, all which would be right, and they're different than what I meant. And so that whole notion of I also completely geeked out on prepositional phrases, right? She told me about the party last night. She told me last night about the party. It's the same phrase, right? She told me last night about the party last night. The sequencing of those prepositional phrases changed the entire meaning of that sentence. And I have been a grammar geek about this for years, around how does the layering of the semantics of language create the meaning that we think came out of the thing we just tried to say, right? There's a very famous comedic sketch called Who's On First. Do you remember that? It's Laurel and Hardy. It's an old American comedian. And it turns out the whole joke is that the player who's playing one of the positions, first base, his name is actually Who. Or no, that's not. All of the players have names that are just prepositions, ways to reference them. Who's on first? No, he's on second. No. And it's this whole notion of getting all tied up by being on the wrong page because we weren't tight enough in our language, right? In how we communicate back and forth. And it's the same way when you get into prompting, right? I'll give you one little, I was doing a product demo. I can't tell you about the product yet, but I was doing a demo of it. And I was asking it about the biggest challenges for change management in the higher education industry.
This episode is sponsored by Deltek, your gateway to peak project performance and profitability.
Deltek's world-class PPM solutions offer robust cost control, customizable workflows, scalable scheduling, and advanced risk analysis.
Trusted globally by thousands, Deltek drives your project success to new heights. Discover more at deltek.com.
That's what I wanted to ask it. But instead, I wrote, tell me about the biggest challenges for change in the high education industry. I left off the ER of higher, and the bot just started spinning like crazy. I was working way harder than I knew it should have for that question. And it comes back with this amazing explanation about building really tall schools. That's high education, is really tall schools. And so it unfolded this entire narrative about very tall schools. And so, Dale, you're right. That notion of specificity of language, that richness of language is the currency. And we can, yeah, there's a whole level of human being communication that sits behind that too, right?
Which then prompts me to the question, actually, which is probably also very important, especially in the project world, which is you can basically have, you know, a script, a document, or anything written with your tone, you know, with looking like you are a native, Italian speaker speaking in a different language. It poses to me, and it's a question, obviously, but it poses to me some concerns, obviously, on how you can then trust what is actually coming out. Now, in the project world, there are many things which are sensitive in a sense, you know, contract-wise or cost-wise. And it can be really dangerous if, for example, I would be able to write, I'm making it up, but just to say, you write, you know, something which is with the same tone of the CEO, you know, to the employee with, no, it really catches the tone, how he normally writes it, and you say just something, you know, that obviously would be detrimental. This is a serious concern. And how, you know, what are the things that you can implement in order to make sure that it's actually used for the proper purpose of, you know, helping employees or, you know, whoever is actually using it, consultants, everybody, rather than then being, well, used in the wrong way?
Yeah, and I think it's a valid concern, right? I think bad actors are going to be bad actors. Our goal is to really help our people see best how to make use of this new technology. I think one of the ways we can do that is helping them understand what they put in and what they can do with what comes out of it. And a lot of that depends on what it is that we're talking about. And so in the environments you all are dealing with, right, high, heavy-duty industrial projects, you have to be able to trust the answer that comes out at a whole different specificity than a large language model that's helping you generate communication content, right? So the it of the system matters and how it's been trained and all that. What you put in gets to that notion, Dale, of prompting, right? And like, have we gotten good at asking with specificity? You know, have we given understanding of what our conditioning context is? Did we tell it what we're asking it to do? Did we give some really good subheadings so it can make some sense of what we're asking for? Did we tell it who it was for and in what tone and what format? Like, have we rounded out our ask to the intern really well? And then what do we do with what comes out of the ask? Copy and paste without running your eyes over it is not acceptable, right? Wouldn't it be acceptable if we asked the intern to come back to us with that report or that email draft or whatever that might be? So there's certainly a disconnect again.
Yeah.
There's a story about the attorney. Did you hear this about the attorney that used it for a case?
Yes.
And it hallucinated some cases and he got disbarred. And we're all worried about that. I started to make bumper stickers that said, "Don't be the lazy lawyer." Like, don't be the lazy lawyer, right? Mm. Like, check the stuff that needs to be checked, right? This is a generative tool that gives us first drafts in a flash, gets us past the blinking cursor curse when we have writer's block, gets us off the blank page. Now, I've got a colleague in the project management risk space. It's doing an AI risk augmentation tool, and that thing is that is trained whole different way than my it or the ChatGPT it or any of those other its, right? That it is really trained to help make sense of risk in project settings in a unique context because it's been given access to those wings of the library. So, yeah, understand that it's an intern. It has particular capabilities. You're the one that gives it the canvas to paint on, and you get to put the paint on the palette to help it kind of bring that to life to you. But I think it's going to be fascinating as organizations start to figure out how to identify opportunities to gain efficiencies or seize new opportunities or solve new problems like they never have before, and then bring different types of AI models to life for those situations.
Yeah, interestingly, just on your point there, I think It reminded me of the episode we had at the top of the year, top of the season. And it was Lawrence Rowland, and we're talking about ChatGPT Plus for projects. And he said, you know, and this was the start of the year, he's like, they're working on technology where it can record everything you're doing and saying. And so if you left it on recording you for a day, 5 days, it records and learns how you respond to emails, what you say on telephone calls, whatever the case might be, on Zoom calls or on Teams calls. And it learns how you respond and react to situations. Then all of a sudden, go on holiday, switch on your virtual you because it's just learned how you react. And it could respond in the same way potentially. So who knows where this would go, but Marco's smirking there. Come on, Marco, jump in.
I mean, it's fascinating. I would never trust a bot, you know, to do my job while I'm on holiday. I'm old school probably, but they would really have a problem. And there is a reason, because you might know what I do 95% or 97% of the times, but what makes a huge difference, if something comes in which is not as the 97%, I might react or say or do stuff in a very different way. And that's the part which I think, you know, people are kind of scared in a sense that obviously AI is going to, you know, sooner or later replace, you know, work. I hear that a lot. There is also a lot of people dragging because of that reason. To me, somehow it will change positions, but it will not replace the position. And I, point in case, I might always be very nice in my replies, you know, or a very calm tone. There is 1% of the time where it's needed, you know, a little bit, a less polite reply. And that's where I think that I would never trust it. I'm really honest. Even if 97% of the time or 98% is right, I would still be worried about, you know, the 1%.
But this, I think this... Go ahead, Tim.
I would probably be a little bit similarly skeptical about this auto out of office bot responder, except for I would take one pass at doing this. I would say, here, hey, bot, there's three kinds of work that I do. Work I do by myself, work you can do for me, and work we should do together. I want you to read a bunch of my emails and see if you can sort them into those three. Because each email that comes in is one of those three contacts that either I'm going to write it. And if it does a good job of sorting out the three, I'd say, okay, great. Now, each time an email comes in, if it is absolutely work you can do for myself, send the response. If it's work we're going to do together, pop open a new email and start a draft. And if it's work I need to do myself, just flag it. So I probably would like tweak the bot a little bit.
But that makes sense. Yeah, I would still be skeptical, but
I'd still be. I wouldn't even turn it on either. I would get it all built, and then I would get ready to turn it on, and I'd be like, no dice.
It's fascinating where we're potentially headed. You know, we've said on previous episodes where I'm sure plenty of the listeners have watched Black Mirror on Netflix, and we're truly headed into the space, I think. And we got to be curious, but we got to be cautious, is what we've said before.
For sure.
With the technology. And I think it's with anything really, because we've known now for quite a few years that planes are autonomous. They don't need pilots. But who would get onto a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Not many people, right? And so that's why we still have pilots.
Well, but that's you are hitting exactly the point. The pilot is there when there is an issue that the computer, let's say, or the system is not prepared to handle. And that was my 1%, you know, of out of the 99 where it's always the same. And I think you're perfectly right. Everybody trusts now the computer, you know. I think it's a really good example. That's the same for the trains, you know. The conductor doesn't do much if everything runs smoothly, where it comes into place and when there is a problem. And I think that's the same in project control, project management, because as Tim, you correctly said, 95% of the things that you can automate and say, please do it. Problem solved, I agree with you. But I still believe that this 1% is actually the crucial one, because if you make an error, Now, clearly, the dimension of the error is different from a plane to project management, project control, but it's still kind of the same. No? If you have not a pilot there which can actually act on something which is not foreseen or not the norm, it's exactly the same as in our case, you know, in project control, if something is different or something has to be reacted in a different way. So I think that's the part which we really need to focus on, because I think everybody looks at the beauty of doing, you know, everything automatic and so on, which, don't get me wrong, it's great because, you know, it greatly reduces what they call the donkey work for many things. But that's the value, you know, on having a brain then is, or not even the brain, sorry, having a history or, you know, knowing what you've done, you know, coming from previous jobs and so on, and then react accordingly.
Yeah. One of the ways we're talking about it is the difference between kind of planning work and executing work from the change management workspace, right? So the notion of creating an agenda for a two-hour workshop to bring a team together to identify the gaps that we're all missing or seeing together and to creatively come up with, like, the two-hour workshop, I'm going to facilitate. I love facilitating the workshops. The building out of that agenda, that it's that planning time versus the executing time. And, you know, one of the concerns in the change management space is that AI runs the risk of taking the people side out of the organization. And the people side is what we do as a business. But I'm like, no, no, no. Like, if it was going to take me 2 hours to draft that document and it took me 45 minutes instead, I have an hour and 15 minutes to go do real people side work. And exactly, Marco, that's, you get to free up. People talk about time savings. I think this is time freedom. I'm freeing my time from that planning work to go do real executing work. I'm freeing my time. You know, that's, I think, the power that a lot of us are going to get to see if we lean into it in our work.
Yeah, it's a fascinating one because I think you're right. And this is where I strongly believe, I think I've said it before on a couple of episodes actually, is where what we have today isn't fit to replace human beings. We should absolutely look at it as something that enhances, speeds up what we do. And I think that's what we've spoken about. And I think that message is loud and clear. Well, certainly for me, it is. And if nothing else, that's what listeners should take away from using it, particularly when it comes to complex change management, because it's not easy and navigating your way through that. We've got the methodologies. We know what we need to do. They're not always the same. The reason you have change management is because no two changes are the same. And so the stuff that is the same, you can do that faster using the technology. I do want to ask you one more on change management before we talk about the two books you wrote in 4 days, because that's fascinating. With change management and AI, and you've spoken a lot about the use cases, Tim, do you have, and I know this is difficult because you can't in reality have two streams of the same thing happen with one variable. But do you know categorically that the use of AI technology or large language models specifically have improved change management for those that have used it?
So we have not categorically. Like, I have not done a measure, and you're right, it's one of the challenges of measuring the ROI of change management is it's not like Dr. Strange, where we have multiverses and we can run the project one way here, one way there, and measure the delta. We did collect a question around the impact that you foresee. So what's the impact it's going to have on your work? And we see some of the common expected ones there, right? Increased efficiency, enhanced communication, better content creation, facilitating idea generation. So really being able to brainstorm and go outside of kind of the realm of thinking that we have already. And then potentially a limited impact. There was about 8% that said that was what they saw. Elsewhere in the webinar, we did ask the question, are practitioners who use AI going to be more successful than those that don't? Are projects that use AI going to be more successful than those that don't? And are organizations that use AI going to be more successful than those that don't? And the percentage that either agreed or strongly agreed were like 65, 61, 71%. And so that's sentiment, but it's the sentiment of 750 change folks around the world saying this is the impact that we expect this is going to have. So we have done a bunch of, and again, a product I can't tell you about just yet, but internal efficiency gain kind of studies, almost like time motion studies. But the neat thing, the wild thing is you can't imagine how people are going to use this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So we didn't like prescribe, here, go do these things. It was just like when somebody called me up and was like, oh my gosh, Tim, I have to tell you what I just did. I would say, okay, hold on. Let me record this. I want to understand. But then at the end, I'd ask them to tell me, what was the task you did? How long did it take you with this AI support? How long would it have taken you without? And so we started building that sort of counter null hypothesis of how long it would have taken me to do the task that I just used AI to do. And so I think there is that facet. And again, I think we're going to see tremendous calculations of efficiency gain there. And then I think there is a whole frontier of solving problems we never could have solved, doing things we never could have done because we didn't have access to this. And so, maybe at the very end, I'll tell you some of my personal AI endeavors in terms of unlocking things we never thought possible, right?
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating one. And it is hard, regardless if it's technology, if it's a methodology, if it's something that you've tried that's novel, doesn't have to be technology related. You can't in reality see the two different results. You could potentially simulate it, but then that's a simulation, and by definition, a simulation isn't reality. We know that. But look, we mentioned about these two books you wrote in 4 days. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey? Because a lot of people want to write a book, right? So yeah, tell us about it. What was the experience like? What did you do?
Yeah, and believe you me, I tried to write a book back in 2022 about the challenge of organizations being both more productive and more human-centric at the same time. There was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears spilled over it, and a book did not come out the other end, right? So it's not easy. It actually started just a couple of weeks ago. I did a keynote on that very topic of threading the needle of being both more productive and more human-centric. I got done with the keynote. It was Friday night. And I thought to myself, this is more of just a thought experiment. Could I take this very visual deck I just used to deliver that keynote? It was 90 slides for a 55-minute deck. Very, very visual. Could I extract from that deck a synopsis and a story of what I spoke about? I don't have the audio. I could get that if I wanted, but could I actually do an extraction out of existing content and turn it into an article? And I got pretty far. It was actually pretty neat. Some of the formatting of PDFing of slides, there were some weird like nuance there that I had to figure out and navigate. But I was like, with that experiment kind of proved out, I thought, well, where else? I've got loads of content. And so I had, where else could I take a chunk of content and figure out how to synthesize it into probably a book? So the very first one was the Alignment Hack 12 Packs. We've talked about the marathon measures earlier. I actually have done all 12 of them, a couple of different podcasts. I've written up a handful of them. I have slides of them, but I've never got it into a book. And so I said, all right, this is the topic I'm going to tackle. So I'll tell you about just kind of some of the like really interesting learnings in terms of how I tackled this one. The opening prompt was an 18-page Word document.
Wow.
So the opening prompt, the very first prompt I input, the first time I hit enter, there was already 18 pages of text pasted in. It started with what I wanted it to help me do. I said, I'm going to give you a bunch of content I have. I want you to help me start to synthesize it into an article at the point. At the time, I blew it out into a book. I told it who the audience was. I gave it my writing style that we had already talked about. I'd extracted my writing guide. I gave it the tone. I told it what the inputs were that I was going to include, podcast transcripts, slide decks, articles. I put all that in the middle. And then at the end, I closed out with, this is the way we're going to write this. There's going to be an introduction and a conclusion, but for each of the 12 alignments, we're going to actually write out and build out an explanation of them. And this is kind of one of my interesting, I'm still trying to make sense of this in terms of like what it means for prompt and generation with large language models, but people keep asking me, how do you prompt how you prompt? And I say, I prompt by thinking in headings. I think in terms of the subheadings that are going to help bring whatever the thing is to life that I'm bringing forward. So if I ask, like, what are the 5 biggest reasons we experience resistance on large construction projects? Like that would be an interesting first level prompt. But then I would think to myself, what are the subheadings underneath that that would actually add some depth to it? You know, give me the top root cause of each, three actions to address each, and who's the primary person to address each. So I sort of accordion out the subheadings that I think are going to make some additional expansion there. So for this one, I said, okay, for each of the 12 alignment hacks, give me the name of the hack, the alignment it promotes, the consequence of the misalignment it addresses, relatable examples of where the hack could be used, the value of achieving alignment, and tips for spotting when and how to use it. So those become my subheadings. And so you take pivot around purpose, matching matters, Zoom, progress over perfection, any of the 12 hacks that I've talked about on podcast, and it actually then starts to pull that content into those subheadings. So that was kind of the first pass. So we got the introduction, the conclusion. I had all 12 of the alignment hacks kind of written out. This was kind of a little neat. And again, I'm still trying to make sense of this, but I took that whole transcript, opened up a new chat and fed it in and said, this is my manuscript. Read it because I'm going to have you help me expand on it now. So that was kind of a really interesting, like, you talk about iteration, and I think people usually think about iteration like this. There's some, like, up-leveling when we start to work in generative AI if we iterate. So now I gave it that. Now I've got the whole thing. So, like, what are the different ways I can take this manuscript and start to stretch it? One was to roles in organizations. So I said, imagine you're a change practitioner. What are the 7 biggest obstacles you run into that evolve, fall out of misalignment? And give me 3 alignment hacks that would help me solve each of those. Now for a project manager, imagine the 7 biggest obstacles you run into that are caused by misalignment, and give me examples and how 3 of those alignment hacks would work. I did nurse, I did accountant, teacher, learning and development, to watch it flex. Because now it understands my 12 alignment hacks. It's read the whole manuscript again. It knows exactly which misalignments each address, and it's able to then kind of flex those into each of them. I did organizational challenges. What are the biggest 7 biggest challenges organizations face around misalignment? I did some fun kind of case studies. And then I got kind of, I was like, well, what kind of material goes behind marketing a book? I've never really done this. So I said, acting as a book editor, what are the 10 artifacts I need to build out so that I can start to actually bring this thing to life? Well, you've got your Amazon description, your synopsis, your 5-sentence description, your competitive analysis, your market analysis. And so I actually fed it my manuscript again. And then we started to tease out kind of the narrative that sets behind all of those pieces. There's one piece I want to read to you, so I actually want to find.
I find this fascinating. Marco, are you going to go and write your book now?
I'm going to write a book now. The problem is it doesn't have to take my style. Probably it has to take Tim's style. It's going to be controversial.
But see, the thing is, we can make one to write in your style. I'm working with a great friend who does leadership development stuff. We're meeting tomorrow. I'm like, bring your 5 favorite articles you've written, bring an outline, 3 of the most pivotal components, and we can start to just pull and stretch and pull it apart. So
it's amazing.
So I got, you know, the detailed table of contents, market analysis, competitive analysis. Then one thing I started having a little bit of fun. It was probably late in the evening. I might have had a couple beers by now. But I'm like, you know, what you see on a lot of books is endorsements, endorsements from famous people. So I load my whole manuscript again, read it because I want you to know the content, but I'm not going to like, I don't want an endorsement from Dale. I don't want to like, that's fraudulent. So you want to hear some of my endorsements? Albert Einstein, Cleopatra, Leonardo da Vinci, Harriet Tubman. First, I said, give me 4 historic characters. But here's the crazy thing. My prompt was so detailed. I said, based on them and their life's work, pick an alignment hack that really connects into it and write a really nice endorsement about Albert Einstein and how solution laps was a great, that's one of the alignment hacks, right? Cleopatra says compare context and contrast. Then I have Atticus Fitch, Hermione Granger, Frodo Baggins, and Sherlock Holmes. And each of them pick an alignment hack that truly like connects to who they were and what they did, talks about it. And then I have a big spot for the Marvel Universe in my heart. So I've got Tony Stark, Steve Rogers, Natasha Romanoff, and T'Challa, each talking about how the alignment hacks literally align to kind of the narrative and the work that they do. So I've had a lot of fun just starting to fold. Once you start playing with words, you can fold them all over in different directions. So.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I love the fact that you've taken us and the listeners through that, because you can hear the way you talk about it, that you had fun and it was exciting, just that whole process. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that'll listen to this and go, let me try this out now. I certainly will. Marco is nodding as well. But geez, and time's flown once again, you know, talking to you, Tim, as well. But before we head to the end of the pod, and we're not going to do five, but we've done the pop quizzes with you and all that type of stuff with you before. Was there anything that you kind of wanted to cover before we head to towards the end of the pod?
You know, I think, and we covered quite a bit already, that whole, you know, this is, you know, one of the biggest things I hear about AI, tell me if you've heard this, people say, I don't know what to ask it. Well, that's because you're thinking about it like an oracle. Think about it like an intern, and then think about what can I engage with it to make, to think about, to create a first draft of. And so to me, it's really kind of that orientation and the realization that we have this. I don't know if you saw the Disney movie Fantasia that came out years ago, but there's a scene where Disney is like the conductor of the orchestra. And he's like, as he raises his arms like the conductor, there's like waves of color shooting up in the air. And so to me, generative AI is like giving, you're like a conductor and you just start to get to weave the words in together. And the better you understand how it works, the true meaning of the language and the words that you put together and how they come to life, you can start to unlock really, really crazy things. You want to hear my passion project I'm doing on the side?
Yeah. Let's go for it.
So my very first illustrations that I did was to support a webinar, and I ended up doing adult coloring book pages for some of the biggest changes happening in the research, right? Digital transformation, regulation, sustainability. But I just had it like do a really cool adult coloring book capturing the essence of the themes that came out of my research. We're driving to school one day and my youngest goes, well, if it can do adult coloring books, I bet it can make one for my niece. She's 6 years old and she loves unicorns. And I'm like, I bet you I could make a very personalized coloring book page, right? So I go into GPT. I say, hey, you know, because of what you can do, go research and figure out what a coloring book page for a six-year-old, like what's the right level of complexity? What would that look like? Okay, great. We got agreement there. Create a unicorn as the main character. And there's some pretty good prompting that got the consistency of character. But once we got that unicorn, I've got the unicorn skiing, the unicorn stand-up paddleboarding, the unicorn doing judo, the unicorn with a pet rat. So like my niece, who's 6 years old and has a pet rat and loves unicorns, now has a coloring book page of a unicorn playing with her pet rat. There's one of her riding in the boat with grandpa because grandpa loves taking the grandkids on boat rides. Her little brother is three. His name starts with a J, so I made his a personified J instead of a unicorn. And that became the recurring character. So we had the letter J fishing, the letter J going sledding, and we had the letter J riding in a boat with grandpa. So now, guess who had one tear run down his cheek when he gets to see a coloring book page of his granddaughter with him on a boat and a coloring page of his grandson with him on a boat, right? So that was like a foray back in October, November, of just kind of the generative power when we start to engage this capability in a whole different way. So most recently I'm doing slate coasters with emotive animal faces. So like I'm laser etching coasters, but I'm creating all the art that goes on them. And it's like a harbor seal that looks surprised, a harbor seal that looks excited, a harbor seal that looks like he's super hungry. But to watch it create the imagery of a spider monkey, I'll go one step further. I know we're at the very end, but at first I was like, give me a surprised, you know, I'd give it that kind of an emotion. Give me a spider monkey that looks proud. But then I started putting it into situations rather than the emotion. So I said, give me a spider monkey that looks like it just saw its son for the first time. And the layers of look that you actually start to get out of the art is fascinating. One of my favorite prompts is show me a picture of, let's say, a chipmunk, whatever the animal is. I don't care the animal, but the condition is about to play a prank on their older sibling. Because do you know how many layers of rich, you know what all the feelings are behind about to play a prank on your older sibling? And like, it'll bring layers of expression into the face of this chipmunk in a way that, so when you talk about like AI letting us do things we've never been able to do before, I can't even make stick figures, but now I'm making personalized coloring books for the nieces and nephews, and a porcupine that looks like he saw a long lost. Two of my favorites were a sea turtle that looks like he's just about to see a long lost friend, and a sea turtle that just spotted his long lost friend across the room. Right? I'll flip these to you when we get done, yeah. Because like, yeah, it's just a fascinating way to start to flex creativity that we've not had before. I've never had before.
No, I agree with that. I don't think I'm a creative person in terms of from art's perspective. And certainly for me, it helps bring out that side as well and gets the brain thinking. But listeners, if you're listening to this bit, generate your own art. Tag myself, Marco, in 10 minutes. Put on LinkedIn, because that's where we all are. Show us what you can do. It'll be fascinating. Yeah. I'd love to see what you can do. But Marco, you wanted to jump in there. Did you want to add anything?
No. I truly believe that you can step into, not professionally, but you can step into areas which I never was able almost to draw. Was drawing like the man, with the circle and the three sticks. And I think it really enables you beyond art, but in general, to actually venture into areas which you were not good at, and because of that, you kind of dropped it. Getting a little bit older, you want to re-enter into something which was nice for you. And I think AI, especially generative AI, gives you this possibility. I think that's the fascinating part. So yes, for project, for the professional part, obviously. But I still believe that there is also a big chunk of, an area where you are kind of fond and you would like to do it, but you just have not the, need AI capacity to help you. Let's put it in this way.
My wife and I were trying to plan a vacation through Italy for next summer. And we went right into ChatGPT, start to give us loops and the ability for it to give us so many different things to consider as we start to compile this trip in our imagination right now. Hopefully it'll come to fruition. But yeah, it's wild the access that we have on the other side.
Well, now that you've shared this intimate conversation with our resident Italian, I'm sure Marco can add context to your...
Absolutely, to the prompt.
There we go. The prompt got me started. That got me my first draft, and Marco is going to give me the expert recommendation.
Absolutely.
See, there it is.
Look, it's been a fascinating chat with you, discussion with you, Tim. I always knew it would be, we've had you on before. It's amazing to have you back, and we look forward to having you on again in the future. There's so much happening in the space, and I like we've said before, it's just the start. It's just the tip of the iceberg. I love your analogies. I always do. Whenever we talk to you, you have some fantastic ones. And the thing that I think a lot of people like with what you say is that what you say is memorable and makes sense. And so I thank you for that, because you really just, for me at least, the simple South African, you dumb it down enough that I can understand it. And so I thank you for that. But look, before we let you go, are there any final thoughts that you want to leave our listeners with?
No, prompt safely. Encourage you to go out and experiment. Look for those first drafts in a flash. I always encourage people to think about yesterday or last week. And where are those opportunities that if you had a really skilled intern, that as long as you gave them really good directions, you could have gotten miles? That kind of looking back is an interesting way to kind of highlight and spot some of those places. So, yeah, I'm certainly on LinkedIn, and a lot of my artwork's there too. I'm a bit of a math geek, so on March the 14th, if you scroll back to then, you will find a lot of fun Pi Day visualizations like pie in the sky. That was probably my favorite. So,
Amazing, amazing. And as we've said before, if you're ever in London, give us a shout and we'll catch up for a coffee or something stronger. Marco, any final thoughts from you?
No, as always, it was fascinating. I really enjoy always, you know, and it opens up my mind many times. You know, you start to think, oh, by the way, I could actually do it in that way. So thank you very much for inviting me. And it's always really great to speak, you know, with people like Tim and others, because it's amazing how your mind actually opens up and you start to think, oh, tomorrow, you know what, I'm going to try this.
Absolutely. I think there'll be a lot of people that listen to this and depending on the time of the day, either go, I'm going to try this now or tomorrow. But no, thank you, Marco, for stepping in and co-hosting with me on this episode. But look, folks, that is all the time we have for this episode. Remember, if you do like what you've heard, please do help us pay it forward and share a link to this episode on your favorite social media. Once again, a massive thank you to our guest, Tim Creasy. And thank you all for listening. Till next time, we say stay safe, be disruptive, and have fun doing it. From me and Marco, it's bye for now.
Project Chatter supports and is a member of Zero Construct. Zero Construct is a new working group that wants to lower carbon construction. Not everyone will be aware, but construction contributes to around 12 to 15% of total carbon emissions.
This is a staggering amount and we need to reduce it. We are a growing community of people that want to help make this change. Everyone is welcome, whether you're an engineer, contractor, or consultant. You just need to want to make a difference.
Our aim is to grow a network of experts so we can all learn from each other and make a positive impact in the places where we work. We'll do this by sharing knowledge and making it accessible in engaging ways.
To join us and find out more, please visit zeroconstruct.com and register as a member. Thank you, and we look forward to speaking with you soon.
For more information, blogs, or to support our charities, visit projectchatterpodcast.com. And if you would like to sponsor the podcast, get in touch via our website.
You can also leave us a voice message via our anchor page and let us know if there's something or someone specific that you would like on the podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the participating individuals and not necessarily to the individual's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual. Additionally, any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.